brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Hey man, got a light? It's time for Smokes.
Hey, welcome to this interesting online edition of Sip, Suds, and Smokes. This is our State of Smokes.
The State of Smokes.
So I just thought, you know, we always have a lot of interesting conversation about kind of the state of some of the industries, you know, that we actually cover here on Sip, Suds, and Smokes. And, you know, the cigar area has been a very lively, you know, industry, you know, for something that's been fairly steady for a long period of time. There's still an awful lot that's going on. And so I thought I'd actually lead off our discussion here with this bellwether agreement that the PCA has struck with the FDA this year. So this is an ongoing measure of, I don't even think it was litigation. I think it was just a matter of legislative, regulatory, you know, language that's kind of was moving in from the FDA.
Some big words.
And part of what was happening is that they were just lumping in everything into one giant category of flavored tobacco. And this was directly, you know, an offset of a lot of vape pens. I'm not going to mention any particular brands because I don't want to get sued by them. But they rhyme with mule. and so part of, you know, they were really getting a lot of pressure, as they should, with, you know, abuse by minors with a lot of these products that were being, you know, introduced into a lot of these products. And so the way they just attacked it is said, ban all flavors, including premium cigars. In fact, you know, everybody's going to have to pay a huge tax, you know, on all of this, you know, on top of whatever you're paying now. So we were, you know, so premium cigar, you know, smokers were actually going to pay for the sins of something that they weren't even consuming at all.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, so, well, and even when, so 2016 is when it first got introduced. Yeah. And, the first original document I know was like 400 pages. And the big thing was the fact that, yes, the vape stuff, and they had never really gone after that type of tobacco as far as regulations. Now, as we know, like we talk about on this show, premium cigars have so much more to do with heritage and flavor and complexity, and it's not this fix. Or
premium cigars were here for 70 years before the vape pen was even invented.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
It's like, but it's like, you know, I think we had a problem with what you've been doing for the last 70 years. I'm like, really?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, and it's like there's the conversation of, well, what's in it? Well, it's tobacco. It is literally tobacco. Some of it's aged and fermented longer. Some's not. But something I find very interesting, I actually had this conversation once with a guy who turned out to be a attorney in D.C. for, he sues big cigarette companies, and he's like a lobbyist and all that stuff. And we were talking about it, which it's cool because I was able to have a conversation with him about cigars and open his perspective up. But we were talking and he was like, yeah, I know for a fact all the FDA people that they brought in to handle that originally were all the people who handled big pharma. So it's like, of course you have these people who are used to regulating this drug and this thing and this pill and all that, who are like, well, what is this and what's in it? And it's just great that over time we've been able to come to the resolution with them of like, a premium cigar is qualified as this. It is hand rolled. It is purely tobacco. It is these things. Now I will say we still have dangers with flavored tobacco, and that can affect our industry just as much. And I still think there's an importance in differentiating between machine made flavors and then regular flavored cigars, because still regular flavored infused cigars, the processes are still done in such a natural way.
Yeah.
And they're also, they're still supported by so many of the other brands that help hold up this industry and help support this industry. And so it's like
Drew Estates, they're one of the big.
I mean, Acid Cuba Cuba was number four sold cigar in a row in America for like 5 years.
It's a shame.
I know, but I like to tell people it's like Starbucks coffee. You have cream and coffee and sugar, and there's lines out the door. But
the taste is subjective. In the end of the day,
you know,
like I just have to grit my teeth when I'm at a shop and I'm watching these people buy handfuls of these flavored cigars. And I'm just like, man, I really hope one day that you get your training wheels off.
Yeah, but I mean, I would much rather somebody come into an actual tobacco retailer.
Oh, sure.
Right, a premium cigar shop, walk around, interact with the person that's hanging out there that day, right, and running the shop and ask those questions, you know, because... You know, I would much rather see somebody grab a handful of Fat Bottom Bettys or grab a handful of Javas or Acids than stop by their, you know, local gas station, pick up, you know, 99-cent White Owls, right? Because, you know, I think that as far as this conversation goes, like, those are the things that you're really looking to regulate, right?
Right.
Things that have been processed in... overly processed, if you will, right? I think there's still a level of, you know, complexity and a level of care that goes into making some of these flavored cigars, right? And as the industry and the world turns, right, we want to be approachable to the people that are new to the cigar industry, right, and wanting to get new into the cigar world. And you know, it's not all the time that, like, something that I think is going to be smooth and easy and approachable is going to be something that is palatable to someone that wants to kind of see what that's about, right? So, like, it's the same way I draw the lines to, like, the whiskey or the beverage industry, right? We've all had that instance where we're drinking some type of flavored whiskey, flavored vodka, right? Like Mike's got a preference here as far as the vodka goes, for sure.
Well, I think that is my observation about what's going on, is that the slippery slope that this is introducing within the regulatory community, because if you really start thinking about other things that could be on this slope, would be going after the same target audience. So, you know, you know, they start with, and you have to look at the pattern that's, they're going after things that actually end up being targeted, marketed to minors in the U.S. And so when you look at other things that fall in that category, why are they not going after flavored, you know, hard seltzers? Why are they not going after, you know, flavored whiskey? Why are they not going after, you know,
I'm sure just give it time.
Other, you know, other flavored products that are going, you know, targeted after that same, you know, demographic. Crowd. Yeah. So,
I mean, that's in the 90s. That's why they got rid of, like, Smoking Joe Camel.
Well, I think the other thing is too, is especially in the spirit industry, a lot of those marketing companies have some pretty firm lines about what they're able to do from a marketing perspective to promote the product, where I don't see the same kind of guidelines in the cigar world, right? It's still kind of the Wild West is from a marketing perspective, especially with a lot of the smaller companies and kind of how they brand it. Like, there's some brands that are out there, and I guess they're technically retailers that have some, like, white label products made, but, like, very much so tiptoe on the lines of the things that they like and identify with, whether it be, you know, cartoons, comic books, right? Yeah. These kind of more playful, kind of juvenile ideas, you know, that they're kind of tossing out there wholeheartedly is, like, their brand. You know, now the product may not be something that's approachable to somebody that's, you know, not of age. But at the same time, right, like, and I think you brought it up about the Havana cigars in a separate conversation, but, like, even in Canada, there's that, like, static brown wrapper that goes over the actual cigar band.
Yeah, so that's...
So that it's not appeasing to anyone.
It was so strange for me to walk into a humidor in Canada and see the boxes. I knew the boxes. I knew what they were. But every cigar in every box, no matter the manufacturer, has a a brown band with white letters over it that says what the cigar is, and it's over top of the colored, nice, decadent bands on them.
Interesting.
And every cigar, it just, it's like walking into the doctor's office of cigars. Like,
it's the most Canadian thing ever. It's like, I'm sorry that this is attractive.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's so weird. One of the things that this brings to my mind in this conversation is the factories. So not only if the regulations become harder on the flavored cigars and try to push them out of the game, you got to think about the factories that affects, the communities that build and manufacture these cigars that affects. So now we're not only dealing with a smoking demographic, you're now dealing with livelihood of families and people and entire towns.
One other observation I have about this, and it's a well-established pattern from regulators, that if you can define it and you can stick a label on it, you can tax it. And how many things have we seen, you know, where that happens, you know, time and time again, where they go through a pattern of it's in a very broad category and then move to the point of describing it in a distinctive way. And that leads to somebody walking up going, I know who you are. I know what that is. And I can draw that up in a piece of legislation of saying, you're going to pay more money for that now,
right?
Because they have a way of, you know, distinctly identifying it. And so I think that is that's the flip side of what the PCA has done here. I think that it's serving their need right now to exclude themselves out of the proposed regulatory language. But the flip side of the equation is that the folks at the TTB are licking their lips going, oh, so we can tax premium cigars different than the way we do other cigars because it has now been defined. That's the flip side.
Yeah. What the guys at PCA are doing, Todd and them, are really stepping out and really just headstrong forefronting this legislation. And I think it's really great what they're doing with the PCA and the CRA. And man, hats off to you guys for all the hard work you guys put into that.
Yeah.
That is bravo. And when we're in your corner, buddies, then we got you.
Well, let's move on.
I wish to register a complaint.
I do, yes. So the topic I wanted to talk about was, you know, the availability of Cuban cigars on a global basis. So I did a lot of international travel.
Real ones
travel.
Or fake ones?
Well, you know, do you really know the difference? You know, I would say at this point.
That's another episode coming.
Yeah, always. And a very, you know, very hot topic always, you know, when somebody asks us, what do you think of this Cuban? I think it's fake. Really? Dude, I paid, you know, an ungodly amount of money for this. It's supposed to be real. I guess the thing that I really observed as I was traveling all through Europe, you know, for a few months, is the net effect that it's having on Cuban cigar distribution. So I actually went to Spain very much with the mindset of I knew that was ground zero to be able to pick up really great Cuban cigars.
Yeah.
I mean, that is traditionally the number one distribution country, you know, for Cuba. And yet the amount of Cuban cigars that were available there was just a paltry, you know, amount of things that were available. And even with that, the retail prices were almost three times, you know, what they were on average.
That's how they were in Canada.
I could not believe, you know, that, you know, some sticks that I had smoked, you know, just even 10 years ago were three times the price. It was just unbelievable. But, you know, speaking of fakes, the Cohibas were everywhere.
Yeah.
And even as I traveled to other countries, I noticed the, you know, how often I would pick one up and say, wow, that is not real.
Right.
And it's, you know, as much as they have worked hard to try and thwart, you know, counterfeiting elements, you know, with putting holograms on the boxes, you know, of putting, you know, black light ink, you know, all over the boxes, over the wrapper, even on, sometimes on the cigars themselves, you know, just how, you know, pervasive it is. So the one thing that I learned out of all, you know, was like, okay, so if the Cubans are not here, where did they go? And surprise, surprise, China.
Right.
Is the market number one market is the number one market for Cuban sticks.
So we met a couple of guys at PCA, oddly enough, that manufacture high-end humidors.
Ike and
Henry.
Henry.
And they were absolutely talking about this, how China only buys local tobacco, right? So local Chinese blended cigars, and then Cubans. It's literally like the only two types of premium cigar that you can purchase in China.
What was funny for me is, that being the case, they were only smoking Davidoffs.
Well, and I think I may have misspoke, but I think Davidoff is one of the ones that they'll let pass into, you know, the Chinese public, right? Obviously, that's heavily regulated by the government there on what they're allowed to import from that perspective. But the other part of that is, too, is like the agricultural standpoint for Cuban-produced tobacco has also taken a big hit, specifically in the last year, you know, because hurricanes. Right. And so they're trying to rebuild a lot of these places. And who knows how much tobacco was lost there also.
It's not a lot of state money to go back and reinvest in, you know, a lot of those markets that, you know, they lost their number one customers when a lot of those farms were created. So, you know, I've got to believe that at the end of the day, China has not only displaced what they've lost to the USA, but they've probably tripled or quadrupled the amount of demand, you know, in the Chinese market, would be my guess. I don't really know the exact numbers, but that would probably be, you know, how I think it went.
Right.
So I am nowhere near a Cuban expert at all, but I do remember reading some article this year about, there was something that was done too, where they talking about the pricing, and I know that they had some way that they changed their pricing structure to where it is now supposed, and I don't know with taxing of different countries, but they're supposed to be like same MSRP no matter the country. If you're in Spain or you're in Canada or you're in Singapore, like, you're supposed to be, from my understanding, the way that they were creating it is, they wanted everything to be the same cost. So obviously that's going to go to the higher end of where a country would carry it. And so, yeah, I mean, everywhere I've been hearing about these influx of prices and these influx of things. And it's crazy because years ago I went to Cuba, and it's also bizarre because are there any Cuban cigars in Cuba? Not really. There's not many there to buy. There's not, I mean, most of the stuff you're looking for and want, yeah, it gets shipped out. There's no point in keeping it in that country because nobody can afford it. So,
right. Well, the other observation I had on that walkabout was the interesting displacement that vape is having against several different categories, both cigarettes as well as premium cigars. And so you would walk into, you know, these cigar shops, and not only do they now have the Cubans, but in general, they would not even have like hardly any cigars. I mean, there were several shops that I walked into. It was like they had five token boxes, you know, of cigars, and the rest of their inventory were all vape pens or they were, you know, loose cigarettes.
Yeah.
So that's a good transition point. And my resident expert sitting beside me here, how is TCH going to displace all of this?
I have no idea.
Because I see it really coming hard and fast, because you have tremendous investment in the cannabis industry, both in the U.S. and Canada alone. The amount of money that is flowing, you know, in legalized operations for cannabis-based products is huge. And the thing is that going to displace people that would normally have consumed, you know, premium cigars as well?
I don't think it will displace anything.
It's a very different demographic.
I think there are a lot of cigar smokers that also smoke cannabis. And I mean, there's a good, think about Thor with Cigar Press Magazine. Like, he also is a cannabis enthusiast. So he was working on a cannabis magazine as well. And it's crazy. He's like, it's just how they juxtapose together because a lot of people in the industry also partake in cannabis. And I haven't found anyone that goes one way or the other. They usually go both, you know.
Well, I think you're going to produce the first self-help video on how to smoke dab. So
yeah, that will be a sip, suds, and smoke.
Well, and yeah, and honestly, exclusive. That conversation is really similar to like, oh, we've got this incredible new whiskey or this thing, or, you know, as far as alcohol goes, will that take precedent over cigar? And it's like, well, why? A lot of people, I think, are finding the marriage of the two, or, you know, it's not necessarily a thing that would overtake it, because it still doesn't require the time and enjoyment that people would get out of an actual cigar.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying our discussion we're having about the state of smoke so far. Listen, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. We have some other topics for us to chat about. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising, glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing. We've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right. Keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On this online edition of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, we're talking about the state of smokes, and kind of cover some things that, you know, some topics that were boiling around during season 11. So, you know, we're all smoking something interesting tonight. I thought it'd, you know, take the time for us to just talk about the sticks that are in our hand. Benjamin, what are you smoking tonight?
Yeah, so I'm actually smoking one of my top three. This is going to be the Cavalier Inner Circle.
It's the first edition.
Yeah, first edition.
That's my favorite.
You know, I think you can still get them, right? Like, they're still out in your local tobacconist.
Regular production.
Yeah. This thing is great, man. So I was thinking and putting my thoughts together about what I was going to bring and smoke here this evening. And I brought a couple of options, but this is definitely one of those. I wanted something. This is oddly enough for me today. This is my first smoke of the day. So I wanted something that was a little bit more mild and meek, and I think that this one does it beautifully, right? Like that full flavor profile is there, but it's not super strength heavy, right? It's probably like medium strength, and this thing is on the edge of spicy, right? Like maybe some more subtle baking spice as opposed to like pepper or any of those kind of abrasive spices.
Yeah.
It's got some nice kind of cool woody kind of hickory notes to it. And just for me is, you know, just a smooth draw. It's comes in a, like a bellicosa size. So you get to kind of play a little bit there, with how the draw works, but the draw is actually a little bit tighter on this one. But the smoke production's incredible. And these things burn beautifully. I do not recall a time currently where I've had any like burn issues. I don't recall a time where I've had to like touch up a Cavalier.
Yeah, I've smoked a bunch of them and I have not had a bad one.
Mike kind of talked about this earlier on another episode, but that you get down to the nub and you go,
oh man,
crap, this over. Is, yeah, I can't believe it. There's got to be one more, you know, burning your lips on this thing.
Should have picked the Churchill.
Yeah, right?
Grab the roach clip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your rating on that stick?
This is a 3 for me.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I'll second that 3.
Barger, what are you smoking tonight and why'd you bring it?
Well, I'm smoking a Foundation Metepe. Metepa?
Metapa.
Metapa. See, languages is hard for me. And I think it's the Churchill size I'm smoking. Seven, the double Corona. Yeah. It's decent. I mean, it's, I just picked it up today and I had a little bit of construction issue with it. Probably within my first 2/3 of it kind of got to where it wouldn't draw. So I had to keep working at it, but that could have been humidification. I don't think it was quality because I really haven't had a bad quality from foundation.
Are you saying there's part of your truck ain't humidified?
Yeah, just the dashboard, you know, it's getting chilly out there. But yeah, you know, the foundation's making some really quality products right now, and I'm stoked to see what's coming out from them. And they just released a couple of really, really good cigars, which I haven't got to try yet.
We want to really cover, I think it's the Aristocrat series.
Yeah. The really expensive series that I can't quite afford yet. So if y'all want to send me some, go ahead and send them on and we'll get them on the show.
Yeah. We'd like to not talk about it hypothetically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. As far as this goes, I was in the humidor before I came here actually. And I picked up 3 or 4 cigars and I kind of had a crap day at work today and just in my head all day. And I was like, you know what? I need a cigar that I can smoke a long time on and I don't have to think about. And so I saw this, the banding was great. The construction looks great. Overall, it's a very appealing cigar. So I splurged and got it. And I'll give it a 3, you know.
Cool. So the stick that I brought tonight was from Nova. This was a PCA release.
That's
this
the is the
yep. The Trappist 1G is the stick that I decided to enjoy tonight. This was a this is an interesting brand. It's a female a CEO. If I mispronounce her name, I'm sorry. It's Lenore Abzaradel.
She was very sweet at the PCA.
She was. I enjoyed the conversation. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. But, you know, this is part of the Trappist 1 system itself. And there are several different ones. There's another one that is like the 5 Burrows that they had. Another interesting stick. Very different than this one. The makeup of this cigar is, I'm looking it up here. I knew I would get it wrong. It's from Terra Nova Cigar Factory in Santiago, Dominican Republic. So this is a DR stick, and I'm getting to the filler binder at one point in time. So I know that the wrapper is a beautiful Habano 2000 Oscura wrapper. You know, kind of interesting. I think I was expecting something a bit more abrasive from just what I had read about this previously, and it wasn't. It was really quite well balanced. I had, you know, some interesting, construction issues. The ash on this was just like flaking all over the place, and you know, I've been smoking it very consistently. I'm not a huffer and puffer to, you know, overstoke the tobacco itself, but that was the only thing that I noticed from a construction perspective. I really like this wrapper a lot. This would be a one and done for me. I probably would not go back to this stick, but I'm glad I enjoyed it tonight. I think from our 1 to 5 scale, this is a solid 3 for me as well. Nate, what'd you bring tonight and why?
So I happen to bring the same thing that Barger's smoking.
Ah.
But a different size. The Matapa from Foundation. It's their newest line, regular production. It's a Sumatra wrapper with a Connecticut broadleaf binder and then Nicaraguan fillers. This cigar also comes in Claro or Maduro. I think you're smoking the Maduro too, Mike.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm smoking the Maduro, and I've had a couple of these, and I've really come to love this cigar. It's got a lot of rich characteristic to it, and I just get a lot of flavor that I don't get from a lot of other things off this cigar. So I've come to really like them so far, and it's up there for me in my upcoming favorites. It's still a little too new to know, but I've really enjoyed this one.
What's your rating on that stick?
We're going out of 5, right?
Uh-huh.
I'd put it at a 4 right now, out of 5.
All right.
Yeah!
I don't know if we're going to stick with that with our ongoing sound clip for four, but
hey, we're up in the ratings to five, so I'm happy.
Yeah, so I did manage to find the wrapper and filler for my stick from Nova. Again, this was the Trappist 1G, just to remind you, it's Ecuadorian Habano 2000 Escuro wrapper. It's a Dominican binder and a Pennsylvania broadleaf filler. So that's an interesting combo. I think that's probably what tamed this, you know.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking this is a DR stick. It's going to be a spice bomb. And it wasn't at all. So interesting combo. Well, I thought that was interesting, all the sticks that we, you know, decided to bring tonight. We need to talk to each other in advance. Yeah. So that just, you know, you guys wanted the humidor. I went to the bag.
Yeah, I think Mike and Nate actually did some colluding because, you know.
No collusion. There's no collusion.
So I thought that we would talk about some other things that kind of captured, you know, our attention from an industry, you know, perspective. Benjamin, any other topics capture your attention?
So I've been on more of a like an homage to the best lighting method and technique for cigars.
The Barger method.
Right? Yeah, whatever, dude. You know.
Trademark.
Yeah, trademark that all you want to, but I'm pretty sure somebody's done that before.
So burying,
needs more ink.
Putting your torch as close as you possibly can.
I mean, I've been using the stovetop, honestly. Yeah, right. Just like lighting it straight from the eye of the stove. And this is, I'm kidding, obviously. But I've actually had
kind with your hash?
Yeah, 100%. And the knife hits, right? So
right.
But I've recently been down a rabbit hole on lighting techniques and like preferred lighting methods and stuff like that, right? Because I've the way that I was taught was to toast, but then also to like try as hard as you possibly can to never come in contact directly with flame to tobacco. And there's a couple of ways to.
I'm just gonna say the toast is a sham.
I think so too.
You're wrong,
I'm gonna,
sir.
Right?
I'm gonna tell you. You're charring your tobacco, bro. If you toast it with some form of soft flame or cedar, sure. But I it's like I tell people. Only thing I remember from
bring
chemistry,
the heat, not the flame.
Right? Chemistry class. Blue flame is hottest. So I mean, you're putting that torch as hot as you can to your most precious, prized flavor cigar that you want to smoke.
But you're not putting that part of the flame. I'm not.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the heat you get, the amount of heat you get off a torch, you can be 2 to 3 inches off of it. But if you actually have any sort of the blue flame hitting your cigar.
Well, for sure.
I would say that you're going to char.
And but that's you're in thermodynamic territory there.
What?
Yeah. Thermodynamics, man. Heat, you know. And how things expand and how things char.
Yeah.
What?
Barger, are you allowed to use those big words?
I know. I was a little shocked. Sorry, that was a little bit of shock.
I'm pretty sure, fellas.
Check your operating instructions.
Yeah. Lights his with the benzomatic propane torch.
Don't let the ink on my nose fool you. Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, just like, you know, so like what I'll find myself normally doing is if I'm in an atmosphere where I need like the windproof resistance of a torch, like if I'm smoking outside or something like that, then that's where I'll use it. But if I'm indoors now, you'll probably find me with a match, probably find me with a piece of cedar, right? And going, like you were saying, they like full combustion. I've even seen, I worked at a cigar bar for a little time, and the art of like lighting a cigar for someone was something that I wasn't necessarily privy to previous to that, because I'd always kind of done that for myself. But like bringing the cigar to the point of it being smokable from the first puff, I think is something that's super cool, and not necessarily like stoking that fire to get it lit. And so I've been practicing that method recently and have gone from like a triple flame, super awesome torch, like down to probably like a single flame, a soft flame, if I can absolutely, you know, get that into the mix, is my preferred method of lighting currently. And going to having that cigar kind of fully lit before I take the first puff has been very, very enjoyable. So going ahead and kind of getting the end of it cherry red, you get that nice symmetrical burn across the entire foot of the cigar. And then starting your smoking experience from there has been a turning point for me. I dare I bring up like the neck pour out of a bottle, right? But like this is something for me that actually makes a difference.
wait just a second.
I wish to register a complaint.
Yes, do not use the words neck pour.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page there. Opposite. Right. It's one of those things where, you know, just kind of being introduced to this group of gentlemen here and really diving into something over the last, you know, 6 or 8 months and taking it from a hobby to more of a passion has gotten, my fire started, if you will, about some different aspects of, cigar manufacturing, the business as a whole, and then the levels that there are of that enjoyment. This is my hard opinion on soft topic, but the way you light a cigar matters, right? Quit torching the piss out of them, right? Quit trying to look cool and almost burning your eyebrows off with that super cool 7-burner Zycar you just bought.
Yeah.
Right? Strike a match, dude.
I use a single flame butane.
Well, and the thing I tell people is like, I love accessories. I love lighters. I have all different kinds just because I like collecting things. But the reality is there is a butane ban in Nicaragua. You cannot import in cans of butane. And I will tell you, all of your favorite blenders and cigar manufacturers are all lighting their cigars with Bix. Every last one of them is testing their blends, lighting it with a Bic. And so, yeah. That is the big thing down there is everybody, every manufacturer, like I've talked to so many of them back in the day thinking, oh, do you use this lighter? And I learned real quick that they're literally like, yeah, it's whatever one's in my pocket. And it's like, but I actually love that in a sense of when they're making the cigar, it's not even about the like, oh, like, did you use this thing or this simplistic thing? No, it's just like, no, we just lit it and smoked it.
Yeah. But see, to piggyback what you were saying, like, I understand the getting the charring the end of the cigar is not good for the cigar. It changes the flavor of the cigar, and it also makes it burn hotter and burn funny and wonky and all those types of things that we complain about. But when you toast a correct way, and when I toast a cigar, the flame never touches the cigar. It's just heat. And then the heat gets to the end of it until it starts to turn red, and then I'll cut. And once I've cut, then now I'm not pushing butane through my cigar, and I'm not pushing all that gas that's expanding and changing the construction and flavor of my cigar. So now I'm actually getting to taste all of the flavors of the tobacco together instead of a charred end.
Yeah, everybody in Nicaragua is going, you're overthinking a burger.
So, and that's possible.
I just want to think about this, though. The term toast, like toast bread. Like, to me,
love toast?
I love toast, but that the aspect...
Some jam?
That's not what I'm trying to have happen to the end of my cigar.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to get it lit as cool as I possibly can.
Sure.
Now, are we talking temperature cool, or are we talking ambiance?
Well, you know.
He's a cool cat.
You're a cool cat.
Old Nader Salad.
They call me Nader Salad.
That's right. But baby, the whole elation riding down this lover's avenue.
Slow as a willow blows, or as fast as the whirlwind grows, we glide beneath the stars in cobalt blue. Look to the left, to the right, keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Well, I have one more question to throw out to close this out on our State of Smokes. So If I could grant you any wish that you would see in the cigar industry for the next year, what would that be?
Good question.
Hang on a second.
So
was that to all of us or to Nate?
Everybody. Yeah.
Well, I would just truly say, first off,
more petite Lanceros.
Right. And this is something that people don't think about, but from a manufacturing standpoint, that companies would focus less on putting out new product, but being able to maintain the product that they have. And that is a big issue these days, even since COVID and everything, is actually being able to just maintain the cigars that you said you're going to be able to make all the time. And so I think that if we can be able to keep in stuff versus these new things that may not stick around because of, you know, we just need to get something on the shelves.
Yeah, the humidors are getting pretty complicated to navigate. And, you know, I guess the vast majority of humidors that I've walked into, you have three or four huge brands that take up a lot of space. And then you have one wall that is representing basically all the rest. And I don't know that that's really helping the consumer, you know, in a self-guided way, you know, walk through the humidor. You know, I think that there inserts, you know, the opportunity for you to turn to the person in the store and go, hey, I'm lost in here. You know, help me out. And I know that Nate's going to say, well, tell me what you like or you don't like, and let's walk around and talk about two or three things. And you're not really trying to sell, you know, specifically through that. And a lot of people I find in the retail setting, they truly want to act as a bit more of a sommelier and helping people just navigate, you know, through that humidor and not upsell somebody going, well, you know, maybe you get one of these, you know, loose cigars, and how about a $50 coffin box? You know?
Right. Well, that's something that I've noticed in the last 10 years in the cigar world too, is you've taken the people that are just pushing cigars, and we've kind of weeded them out in the brick and mortar industry. And now we've got people that care about the industry and what they're actually selling. And so they're becoming less of pushers of cigars that we don't like, that they sell for cheap and make lots of money on, and actually pushing quality and educating folks. And I think that's when you find a tobacco store, a tobacconist that you can trust and rely on, then you've started to find gold, you know?
Anybody else got an answer to the question? What's your big wish?
Well, I mean, this may be like the millennial in me kind of leaking out a little bit, but I'd like to see like a larger digital presence from the manufacturers themselves, right? And I think that I've kind of noticed this going through this like introduction to
Sips. Did you say more cigar babes? I think you just said more cigar babes.
But just like a presence of like an actual like home landing page for your cigar brand. I think a lot of them do a very mediocre job of having that type of representation, but like trying to dive into these blends and find a little bit more of that inspiration, and you know, like a consistent lineup of blends and kind of what's coming next are very hit or miss for me. Now you'll find media outlets, right, that have had some type of conversation, and like you can take the accuracy of that information, you know, as you will, right? I think that we do our due diligence here and try to get as much correct information as we possibly can.
You are not worthy yet.
Yeah, no, fair. But, you know, there's not a lot of, like, cigar manufacturer websites out there where they have an up-to-date lineup on what they're producing, right? Kind of like a what's coming now, how we got started, where this inspiration comes from. And I think it's probably more on the smaller brand side of it, right? Because you're going to find most of your major brands out there. But there are some really cool, smaller, but I would consider well-known brands that could have a better just kind of like digital footprint for the average consumer to get some of that kind of baseline knowledge and get that intimate feel for why they exist outside of a secondhand opinion.
I think that the reason, and this is just my opinion, I think the reason that we don't see more of a presence in that aspect is because, you know, the digital age is moving forward and the cigar industry is trying to stay consistent.
Well, I mean, I would say that's an aspect too of honestly people just not knowing how to adapt with it.
Right.
Because I think it depends on each company. Some companies you have that are still being ran by marketing teams of people who've worked for that company for 20 years. And like,
I did this when Nixon was president. It worked then, gonna work now.
Right. Well, and I'll just say from a standpoint, I know several cigar websites where to me, like, they'll release a new cigar, and then the next year they'll release a new cigar, and then they'll release a new cigar. And then you go to their website 4 years later and you realize that the cigar from 4 years ago isn't even on the website.
Right.
And like, I just can think of ones where I've seen cigars that aren't even in production anymore.
Right.
And that's where I think, totally to your point, because I get what you're saying. I knew where you were going, not to cut you off, but sure. Like, I do think there's an aspect of it. It is a little like naive, you know, in a sense of not knowing, like, if we had this there, like, even while we've been doing this, you know, I pulled up Foundation's website. They have everything they put out, every size, everything, but they're a younger, newer company. But
right.
Some of these older companies, it's just like, you have to work too hard to find out even where the cigar was rolled that you're smoking if you don't know. And so it is really hard to grasp that from a company, to know what this company's about.
So I've had enough time to actually think about answering my own question. And I would say at the top of my list of big wish would be a better adoption of being able to enjoy cigars in a lot more settings.
Yeah.
I just really feel like that echo of smoking being banned through cigarette smoke, that long, dull echo is lasted way too long from my perspective.
Yeah.
And I really feel like there are a lot of on-premise locations that are missing the opportunity to carve out some space, you know, as a dedicated, you know, cigar lounge. And I think it's part of at least the culture of enjoying these products, along with, you know, other food or beverage products at the same time, that I feel like is being missed. And I think the big thing to me that's changed is the filtration and air handling systems have improved, you know, so greatly that it's like, I'm sorry, man, for the amount of money that you would have to invest to turn 600 square feet into a cigar lounge, it's not really that a huge amount of money.
Right.
And I think you would wind up having not just people come in and smoke. I think you would gain a loyal following of people that would actually come and enjoy that space along with the food or beverage products that you may be serving in that establishment, at the same time.
Not to even, you know, dive deeper into that, but the responsibility of most cigar smokers versus your normal bar patron are night and day, right? I feel like hanging out at the local cigar lounge or someplace that is, you know, kind of cigar focused, you're going to run into more people that are there for the camaraderie and the enjoyment of a smoke, a nice glass of whiskey, a nice glass or bottle of wine to share among friends, right? And well spent time, as opposed to getting wasted and firing up a stogie. You know what I mean?
If somebody's going to come in and smoke a $20 stick, they're going to spend another $50 on food or beverage in that same establishment.
At least.
They're not going to come in, enjoy two cigarettes and one beer and leave.
Right.
You know, these are people that they're there for a good hour. They're going to linger. They're going to, and it's an experience. It's
lingers,
not just, you know, yeah. So I really feel like there's just a missing opportunity there. And I'm not talking about, you know, having a full open smoking situation. Look, I respect, you know, the lifestyle choices of other people. I'm not talking about we're there to impose our will and our experience on other people. I'm not talking about something that broad, but I just think that there's, you know, a missing opportunity for a lot of places. I enjoy a lot of the cigar lounges that I've been to, but I don't know, there's just like a huge gulf of opportunity, I feel like, that's being missed. And
yeah, especially in Canada.
Yeah, especially in Canada, for
sure. Come on, Trudeau.
Yeah.
Do something right.
Well, hopefully you've enjoyed our discussion here on the state of smokes and some of the topics. We actually talk like this a lot more than you would imagine. And I'm also happy that we actually captured some of these conversations that we've had here to share with all of your listeners. So hopefully you've enjoyed the discussion. Hey, we'd really love to know what you think about some of these topics. So feel free to drop 2 or 3 ounces a dab, mail it off here to info.
That's right. Smokes. That's right.
I'm sorry. I did that rather
attention
quick.
Attention, good old boy, Barger.
Yeah. Research and development.
Yeah, R&D department.
There in quotes. Yeah. And air quotes. So, well, I want to thank my co-host for joining us for this discussion. Good old boy, Barger. Thanks.
Hey, man. Thanks. And keep on smoking whatever it is you smoke.
Yeah. Benjamin, always great to hear your contributions to our conversation.
Glad to be here and smoke them if you got them.
Nate, thanks for always joining us and bringing a great perspective.
Keep it toasty.
I knew he was going to say something like that. Hey, this is good old boy Mike. Thanks for joining us here on this episode of Sip, Suds, and Smokes. Check out some of our other episodes that are available to you. I'm going to ask you to keep on sipping.
Yeehaw! We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Tap it in.
The subscribe button.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, Uncle Larry, or whoever it is that talks to you on your phone. Play podcast Sip, Suds, and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our tasting notes flow out on Twitter and Instagram with our handle @sipsudsandsmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands,
millions, and millions
of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. Come back, join us for another episode, and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the good old boys, will see y'all next time.